today we have the privilege of hearing from a couple that I gladly call friends at this point. And Tracy and Elaine Hayes, I met them a few weeks ago, and they're really good friends with one of our elder couples in the church, Linda and Gary Henders. And you may have heard a little bit about or saw in the paper, and some of you may know Tracy and Elaine, but they're going to tell us their story this morning. And I'm not going to go into any of it, but I'm just telling you, it is inspirational. When I met them a few weeks ago, we had coffee, we sat down, we talked. And when I walked away from that meeting, I literally said, regardless of the accident or not accident, these are some inspiring people, some of the most inspiring people I've ever met. I mean, Tracy just makes me mad, really. I mean, I told somebody the other day, I got a headache, I ain't working out. And this guy just runs triathlons and makes me irritated. But anyway, I love these guys, and they have such a profound word. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to lean in. I want you to get your notebook out. I want you to do whatever it is to grab some notes, because I'm telling you what, they're going to say some things. They're telling a story, but they're going to say some things that God's going to speak to you through. So I want you to be prepared not just to hear their story, but to hear what God wants to say to you as they speak to you this morning. So if you would, get up on your feet and give Tracy and Elaine Hayes a good Summit Church welcome as they come to share with us this morning.
Well, good morning. Thank you guys so much for being here, and thank you, Pastor David, for giving us the opportunity to come and just sharing your time, your platform, and we love getting to share our testimony and pass on what all God has done. And so thank you for being here this morning.
Yes, David, I just want to follow up on something Pastor David was saying, and it's so easy when you hear someone else's story to think, wow, that's really cool. You know, God did something great for them. But it's hard to believe that he can do something for yourself personally. And so what I want to just say is what all he's done for me and what all he's done for Elaine, what all he's done for Pastor David, what all he's done for Pastor Mackey, it's available to everyone here. And I just want to follow up on Pastor David's, you know, comment to lean in and grasp for you personally what we're going to talk about.
And, you know, we have a specific testimony, but you have a testimony as well. And one of the scriptures that has just really jumped out to us the last couple of years is from Revelation 12:11. And it said, they overcame the accuser by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. And it's powerful. What God has already done, what Jesus did on the cross with his blood, and then we add that. He has instructed us. We add our testimony, the words of what God has done for us personally. It overcomes everything in our life, and it helps break for other people as well. And so we just need to be prepared and ready to share, because you can debate theology. You can argue theology. Someone may or may not agree with you, but no one can argue what God did for you personally, and it breaks all barriers. So I just encourage you, as you're listening, not just to ours, but be reminded, what has God done in my life? And be ready, and especially in this day and time, we need to be ready to take our message out into the world. They're hungry, they're waiting, they're listening, and there's a lot of reason to give God glory.
I don't know if you guys are supposed to stand the whole time, or you want to have a seat, but I was thinking, gosh, are they going to stand as long as we're going to stand?
It's like a football game. Y'all are just going to stand until we do a touchdown or something, I guess.
But I hope you're not waiting to see our touchdown dance, because it's really, really weak.
But one of the things, some of you may know Tracy's story, but in case you don't, we just kind of wanted to start at the beginning and just kind of give a primer on all the background and where we were, because when you know that and you see Tracy today and you hear the things he's doing, it's obvious God did a miraculous work, because there's no other explanation for it. So we just want to go back just a little bit, and again, the accident itself, Tracy was on a bicycle and was hit by a car. And at the time, we don't know a lot of what happened, because the car did not stay at the scene of the accident. So a lot of pieces of the puzzle are still just blank. But we know that at the time of the accident, he was not, when they arrived on the scene, the paramedics arrived there, he was not breathing. And they did not know how much damage would have occurred from the actual collision as well as the loss of oxygen. They were unable to intubate him on the ride in the ambulance, and so that's, you know, another, they were just doing like the handheld bagging to try and get oxygen in there and try and get some oxygen to your brain. But it was just, there were a lot of unknowns. And one of the things that sometimes a picture is worth 1,000 words. And so just the first picture we want to put up is the helmet from the accident. And it was several months before we actually were able to retrieve that from the police department because it was a crime. They actually had kept that. It had not been returned to us for quite a while. And I was really nervous about seeing it. I didn't know what my response would be to it. And when Tracy, it was in a sack, and when he pulled it out of the sack, it was just the immediate sense of, God, you are amazing. How is he alive? This doesn't even make sense. Even though we don't know the details, one individual that was close to the accident said he heard the collision and he just saw out of the side of his eyes, his peripheral vision, the bike upside down. He goes, I don't know if Tracy was still attached to it, what had happened, but we know the bike was turned totally upside down from just the accident itself, and you know what was left of the helmet was not a lot.
And I had the privilege of meeting that gentleman in person, and I'm so thankful that the very first person on the scene, he felt it his, you know, he took advantage to pray for me. And he said he didn't know. He said that he knew that I was pretty hurt, and so he knew he couldn't move me. He didn't even know if he could put his hands on me, but he decided to go for it, and he just laid his hands on me and began praying for me. And I truly believe that first person there, instead of issuing any kind of medical, you know, care at all, the fact that he prayed for me just set things in motion.
At the process of Tracy's recovery, he began with just being able to sit up, literally even just hold his head up. He was not able to lift his head beginning, went from sitting on the side of the bed to then standing, which is the next picture, which actually took assistance and rails and bars, and he could stand for a short period of time. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped that one. This was actually before that, sorry. When we arrived at the hospital, Tracy was in a coma, and he actually, this is basically how we were for the first week for sure, and for also the first 3 weeks when he was in ICU. So he was on a breathing machine, he had a feeding peg, and a tracheotomy. So now we'll go to that next picture. Thanks, Billy. So we started with standing, which took a bit of assistance, and then the next picture was beginning to walk with assistance. Did you want to share?
Yeah. I remember so very little about different things, and I do not remember. If it weren't for these pictures, there's a lot of things I wouldn't remember. But I know that the very first time when they were trying to, you know, teach me to walk, basically it took three to four people to do it, because one person would hold me up, one person would move my right foot, and one person would move my left foot. And so they were just teaching me. In fact, that's kind of one thing that I really, you know, people have asked me, you know, what's it like to have a traumatic brain injury? And so the best description I can give you is to say that it's like being a kid again. It's like being in kindergarten, because I couldn't figure anything out on my own. But if someone would have to show me everything, how to do everything, including walking. And so that just was a lot of times before the accident, people would say, oh, Tracy, you're just a big kid, you know, because I love to play games and I love to laugh and I love to joke around. And they've just, a lot of times I was told of being a big kid. Well, I literally became a big kid, because to figure anything out on my own, I was not capable of. And so to be able to do anything, I had to be shown how to do it, and then I would try and you know, pick it up from there.
So it was a progression from, you know, being able to sit, then to stand, then to walk, to then actually being able to run. And Tracy's story is not just the miraculous of how God took him from truly near death to the recovery where he is now, but it was the accelerated pace. It was in truly just such a short time once things began improving. And just slightly less than a year after the accident, Tracy competed in a sprint triathlon in Denton, and where he actually got third in his age group.
So Elaine made the mistake, said, hey, whatever your first event is, I want to do it with you. And I basically...
I thought that was going to be like a one-mile walk, you know, or like one of those really short fun run things.
And so I've done this race several times before. In fact, a lot of our family members have. And it was really cool that day because it was such a big deal to my family. There were like 9 in my family that did that event with me. And my brother-in-law actually said, is it wrong to really be upset that a guy in a coma is still going to kick my tail at this triathlon? And you'd have to know Bill to know that's right in his wheelhouse. That's how he kids around.
But when Tracy talks about, you know, the first few weeks, really even the first 6 weeks after the accident, he has very little recollection, and most of the stories he tells are things that have been repeated to him. It's quite the opposite for me. The first, not just the few weeks, but the first few minutes after the accident and finding out about it are some of the most significant memories that I have of the whole journey. And God was so faithful, just step by step by step, just every second. It still amazes me of just even the smallest things. Nothing was too small for him to intervene and just somehow show me, I see you. I see what's going on, and I've got this. The day of the accident, Tracy had been out on a training ride, and I knew what time he was supposed to be back. And he was known for sometimes underestimating how long he was going to be gone, and he might be back a little later. But as the time went on and on, I knew something was up. And so I had actually walked out to our front yard and was just looking up and down the street. And I had seen 2 police officer patrol cars parked at a neighbor's house, and I really didn't think anything about it. And as I continued to wait, the cars pulled away from our neighbor's house, but they were just going really slow. And then they pulled in front of our house and stopped. And I knew it was about Tracy. It's like they're looking for our house sign something. But I know what they're here for. But the main question was, what are they here to tell me? Is he alive or is he dead? And so the second that they got out of their car, I just remember meeting them just as quickly as I could, and I just said, is he alive? And the officers just began to say, are you Elaine Hayes? Your husband has been in an accident. He was involved in a hit and run. He's at Northwest Texas Hospital in serious condition. And he's like, I know he went on and he talked and he told me some other details, but all I heard was he's alive.
See, that's what happens at my house a lot of times. I'm telling all kinds of details and she just checks out and just doesn't listen. So that's kind of her.
But I knew that if he was alive, there was a chance he could stay alive. So I grabbed my keys and headed to the hospital. And from where we live, we're right off of I-40. We're not very far away from the hospital. And in that minutes, maybe 3 or 4 minutes, God downloaded to me so much of the foundation of what I was going to need to hang on to in the next coming weeks. And I didn't even know what I needed. And one of the first things when I was driving, I just started praying. And I was like, Lord, is the season of us over? You know, Tracy and I've always looked at it as like who we are individually, but who we are together is different. You know, it's our usness. Is that season over? Because it feels too soon. It doesn't feel like time to be over. And I just heard the Lord speak to me, you're not going to say goodbye. And I can't tell you how many times after that, so many medical doctors, police officers, firefighters were just reporting that they didn't think Tracy was going to make it. They were giving him less than a 20% chance to survive. And I never heard that. It was like God had spoken to me. He's not going to die. And that's what I held on to. I heard. He gave me no other promise about an outcome. He never said that this was going to be an outcome, that Tracy would be restored to the level that he has been. But it was, he promised me, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And I'll never leave you or forsake you. And so I knew that no matter what we were fixing to be facing, he was going to be with me and it would be okay. And the other scripture that came to my mind, and I know it had to be the Lord because it was just, it wasn't anywhere near my thought process at that time, and it was out of Daniel. And when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were being threatened to be put into the fire, they had said, I know my God is able to deliver me, but even if he chooses not to, I will still worship him. I will not bow down to any other gods. And I thought, that's it. That's God's making a promise to me. You're not going to be alone through this. I'll be there with you. And my promise back to him was, regardless of the outcome, I'm committed. I'm worshiping you. There is no other God to turn to, and we'll be together.
And like Elaine said, that six-week period, basically the 2 weeks before the accident and the whole time that I was at Northwest Texas is a blank to me. I mean, it's a complete blank. But I really think that's, you know, God was doing something in that because I do not remember hurting at all. I'm not saying I didn't have any pain. I just don't remember any of it. And, you know, especially when I talked to people who came to visit me saying how agitated I was and how I kept trying to pull all the tubes out of my throat and out of my arms and everything. I know that I was, you know, agitated and anxious for something. And so I do not remember ever feeling any pain whatsoever. In fact, the only physical thing I can remember is when we got to the next place, which was Baylor Rehabilitation. I remember when they were trying to teach me to walk and to stand, when I would stand up, the room would spin for like 30 seconds. And so I just had to hold on to something to let the room quit spinning. It didn't hurt, but it just was, I couldn't, you know, start, you know, practicing to walk or do anything until the room settled down again. That's the only physical thing I can remember at all during all this process.
And so I'm going to jump back to a little bit of things going on in ICU. It's like Tracy was asleep through all this stuff. So it's like if he didn't go ahead and jump in or something, he's going to be standing there for a while and not getting to say anything because he doesn't have any recollection of it. But after we got to the hospital and Tracy was in a natural coma. It was not drug-induced. So there was good and bad with that. It's good in that the doctors, the medical staff, myself, we're not having to make a decision of how long to try and leave him in that unconscious state, that it was in God's hands. The bad part is that there's nothing medically you can do to try and wake him up. You just have to wait it out. And during that season of waiting, there were three things I specifically remember that I just learned that God taught some things other people shared, and some things it truly was just, I know God had to reveal it to me because I had no experience in it and no one else was sharing it with me. But one of the key ones was such a reminder of don't think about the what ifs. I think statistically that it's like 95-97% of the things that we worry about never happen. And if we would just deal with the things that actually happen when they happen and allow God's grace to cover us at the time, then we would alleviate so much stress in our lives. And God, there were so many opportunities for my imagination to run wild. And God was like, don't focus on the what ifs. Just focus on me. And the other thing was related to time, that my brother-in-law, one of his sayings is always like, time ain't nothing but a thing. And it was such a reminder during that season, because there's a lot of pressure, that medically Tracy needed to have reached this level in the first 24 hours, the next level, you know, certain things they were looking for in the first 48 hours, and he wasn't meeting any of those milestones. And God was just like, it's on my time. This is my calendar, my time of what he needs, and he will remain unconscious as long as necessary, and everything else is also on my timeline. Don't look at any of the times. And the third thing was, don't attach too much emotion to the reports. And that was good or bad. It wasn't just don't listen to those bad reports, that it was the wisdom of also learning, well, don't attach too much emotion to the good reports either. Because it could just, within the same hour, we'd get a good report and then a bad report and then a good report and then a bad report. And I would have been emotionally exhausted. And God was just like, just whose report will you believe? I'll believe the report of the Lord. And I'll believe things as they happen and deal with them as they happen and not attach my hope, my emotions on anything externally that was being promised, good or bad. So after about 7 days, Tracy was not progressing. He was still in a coma. He was not responding to pain at all. They come in and they do different things to try and, even if someone's in a coma, they're trying to get reflexes, responses, just, and pain stimulation is one of the ways they try and get a response. Tracy was not responding at all. And his neurosurgeon pulled us into a private room, which is never a good sign. And he said, I think I may have missed an initial diagnosis. He said, I think there's a possibility that Tracy suffered damage to his brainstem. And if that's the case, I mean, our brainstem controls everything. And he said, if that's the case, there's a really high probability that he will never wake up. And if he does wake up, he's going to need care 24/7 the rest of his life. And it was one of the hardest days of the whole journey. That was some pretty sobering news. But prior to that, about 2 days before, I had had a friend send me an email that her daughter had had a dream. And in this dream, she said, I saw God holding Tracy in his arms. And he was also holding his brain and stitching. He said it was like an embroidery, or, you know, tiny, tiny little stitches. And that behind it was this thread. And she said, I just knew immediately that it was the blood of Jesus. And it was the resurrected blood of Jesus with power in it. And that it was just illuminated, glowing, kind of translucent. And she said, I just saw God sitting, just very calmly, very meticulously, just stitching, and kept hearing the word restoration, restoration, restoration. Well, I had read that, just kind of tucked it to the side. And while we were waiting for the results of the MRI, I had reread that. That night, the doctor came in and he said, I've got great news that there is no brainstem damage, but I also have bad news, and that it is a very serious shearing injury. And he said, what that is, it's like your brain's a bowl of Jell-O that's been turned out into a bowl and then just shaken. And so it's just torn all throughout. He said there's not just damage that's restricted and limited to one area, but it's just all throughout. And it's like these tiny little tears all throughout it. And my son, when he left the room, and he goes, Mom, he said, that's related to the dream. He said all those tiny little tears is what God was stitching up. He's like, he's already started. He's already repairing. And it just brought a tremendous amount of peace. And it's like, God's doing it. We haven't done anything medically, no intervention. We just now know what's going on, but God already knew, and he had already started repairing it. Well, almost within 24 hours, and I wonder, I was thinking about that this morning, of just if God kept him asleep long enough for us to have to go get an MRI and find that out, for him to tell me, I know, I don't need the MRI to see what's going on, and I'm already working on it. Because it was almost within hours after getting that report back, Tracy started waking up, and he started responding. He started opening his eyes, and from there, things started improving so fast and changing quickly. We were there for two more weeks, and then we were transferred to Baylor Rehab in Dallas.
I was asleep the whole time, so I don't remember hardly anything.
But so share some of your memories then. At Baylor was kind of where Tracy began to remember. And even though he was awake the whole 3 weeks, I didn't know till later that he didn't remember a lot of that time. And we had so many conversations and talked about so many things, and people came to visit. And then, you know, a few weeks later, I'd be bringing it back up, and he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't have that conversation.
The best way I can describe my time at Baylor, like I said, the only way that I know of my time in Amarillo was the scar, and I don't remember it from the time, but the scar from my tracheotomy and the little bit of scar on my head from where the accident, but that's all I remember about Amarillo, and that wasn't at the time, but that lets me know that I was there. The best way I can describe Baylor is if you wake up on a morning where, like on a Saturday morning, and you don't have to be anywhere, and you're kind of awake, but you're really not having, there's nothing on your calendar that you have to do, and so you're kind of half slumbering, half awake. That's kind of what Baylor's like to me. I remember very, very little about it, and what I do remember is kind of spotty, and I know that there were I do remember some people who came to see me, and I do remember, like I said, I don't remember them teaching me to walk, but I remember it was a big deal when they took me to the stairs. And see, that's something that's kind of hard for me to remember, to relate to, because, you know, having a TBI, that's just life to me. I mean, that's just life. And so a lot of people, when I do something, they'd say, wow, you're walking the stairs. And I'm like, well, yeah, didn't everybody walk the stairs? Isn't that what you do? But I mean, they were just like, no, this is a big deal. And to me, it never really, equated to what was going on. And I know this because Elaine told me, but apparently I lost like 35 pounds in 3 weeks. And they were feeding me through a feeding tube, but apparently I wouldn't get enough to eat. And so someone had brought a care package for us. And I wanted it. I mean, I wanted the cookies, I wanted the chips, I wanted everything in there. And Elaine was like, I wasn't supposed to have any of that. And so
during this time, it's like Tracy had begun waking up, but he was regaining some strength, but he was not safe to be left on his own. He was not allowed to stand up, get out of bed on his own. I was in the room, but they wouldn't even authorize me to assist him to walk different places. And as he was mentioning earlier, he was very agitated, and a lot of times at night would just be pulling at different things. And so his hands were strapped to the sides of the beds at night when no one, in case, you know, we weren't able to watch him 24/7. And then they put gloves on, and then they had a strap across him as well. Tell the story of your brother the night Dave was there.
My brother spent one night with me, and because at that point in time, people had to stay with me 24/7. And when my brother was there, he basically said that once they strapped me in, that he could hear me undoing the Velcro. And he said, Trace, go ahead and don't do that and everything. Just, go ahead and stay strapped in. And he said about a minute went by, and all of a sudden he could hear the Velcro going very, very slowly. Earlier I was trying to just rip it off, but now it's going real slow. And so, when I think back on that, I kind of think, but he knew exactly what I was doing. And I wonder if that's how God thinks of us. A lot of times we're like, hey, I'm going to do something and you're not going to know. He's like, I am well aware of what you're trying to do. But we're not hiding anything.
Yeah. And so one of those nights, I'm sleeping in a chair next to his bed, and I wake up, and Tracy is just seated on the side of the bed, like he's fixing to get up. And I'm like, whoa, what are you doing? You know what? And he's like, I want in that basket. He's like, what'd they bring? And I'm like, honey, you can't get up and walk over there. And he hadn't been released. He had swallowing issues and had been aspirating food into his lungs without a cough reflex. So it was very dangerous for him to be eating foods, and he had a very restricted diet. So I'm like, honey, you can't have that. And he got the funniest grin on his face. It was just the orneriest. Yeah, we came up with the same word. And it was so ornery, but the cutest little grin. And he was just like, oh, yes, I can. And I stood up and I was trying to hold him, push him, keep his shoulders on the bed. And he was stronger than me. And he gets up and he is pushing against me, and I am just, he's just moving me backwards and backwards. And you know, for a second I thought, obviously it was a lot more dangerous for me to be trying to shove him back on the bed instead of just assist him, but I knew that he wasn't supposed to be up. And we started laughing so hard. I mean, it was just like one of those belly laughs. And it was in the moment I remember thinking, am I losing it? Am I having a mental breakdown? Because this is not funny. This is dangerous. It was really scary. And so we are both just laughing and laughing. And the next day, I was
asking. But I got my cookies. I'll say that.
Oh, he did. Before the nurses got in, he had like 3 crammed down his throat. And obviously, he didn't choke. But the next day, I was asking the Lord about it. And I was like, really? Am I just losing, you know, my mental stability here? And what the Lord said was, he said, what you experienced was joy in the midst of sorrow. And it was such an expression at a deeper level of, you know, I hadn't laughed in weeks. And even just laughing before that, it was just such a sweet gift that God gave us.
Yeah, in fact, that's one thing I've noticed is the biggest difference in Elaine now compared to before the accident is she laughs so much easier than she used to, and she really is funnier than I remember. I mean, you're probably not seeing the comedy side of her now, but she's really funny, and she laughs so easily now.
He just thinks I'm funny. I'm really not that funny. But as long as he thinks I'm funny, that's good. So after 3 weeks, we were dismissed from there and moved to an acute care rehab center. And one of the things that it was really inspiring and motivating for the therapist that worked with Tracy at Baylor, for several of them, he was their first patient who ever walked out of the facility on their own. Because typically in that level, and again, just the time it typically takes, it's like with a TBI, the damage can be measured in minutes, seconds, but the recovery is days, months, years. And for them to see that kind of recovery from the time he came in to the 3 weeks when we left was phenomenal. So we moved on to Pate Rehab, and that was a facility where Tracy did therapy. He would leave about 9 o'clock in the morning, and then was released at 3 in the afternoon. So he went to just another building there on the same site where we were and would spend his day in therapy and then would come back at 3 in the afternoon.
And that's really where my memory begins, is I remember most everything that happened at Pate. And one of the first things that I remember at Pate, for the most part, I was never in a bad mood. You know, I was not in a great mood, but life was just level. Because again, I was just trying to learn how to deal with life with a traumatic brain injury, and that was all I knew at the point. But so I was just very, very, just, you know, even keeled per se. But I remember one time I really got discouraged, and because I started thinking that I was going to fit into a category of disabled or handicapped, and that just was really disturbing to me. And I, at that point in time, I had just began to seek the Lord, and I'd really, you know, the difference was in the past, I would want to spend time with the Lord to check the box, you know. Well, I need to have my quiet time, so I need to, you know, read the Bible and pray. And but now I had switched to I wanted to spend time with Him. And so at that point in time, when once I had was really struggling with those two things, I felt like the Lord told me, He said, look, I will never label you anything. I'll never give you a label. And that was very reassuring to me. I just felt it made it, you know, it really trusted me. In fact, I was remembering the scripture where, you know, He's got a different name for me that's not even revealed yet. And so He's just not going to come up with, you know, any labels that I get is just going to be from something man puts on me. And so that was just very encouraging to me. And at the time too, when I was at Pate, I remember, like I said, the whole first time I really began spending time with the Lord a lot, you know, I wanted to, and they would wake me up around 6:30 every morning to give me medicine, and that was way early for me because I didn't have to be anywhere till 9. And so I would have basically an hour to an hour and a half to myself. And I remember just spending time with the Lord one day, and I'm going to call what I was doing prayer, but I really don't think you could call it prayer, because at that point in time, my understanding was as long as the salutation was there and the benediction was right, everything else was okay. Well, really, if you're going to properly categorize this, it was a gripe session is really what it was, because and it went something like this. I woke up one morning and said, good morning, Lord. It's great to be here at Pate. I'm so happy to be here. I mean, sarcasm's just dripping all over. And I love how God can not only understand our words, but He can understand our attitude as well. And so I said, you know, today's going to be a day where I'm going to do things that people are going to tell me that I don't want to do. These people I don't know are going to tell me to do it. And it's just going to be fantastic. And from there, I just started going down the list. I started naming names. You know, Tara's going to have me do this, and Penny's going to have me do this, and Leah's going to have me do this. And, I mean, it just went on and on. And so about that time, and really, I don't know how you guys are, but one thing I didn't have to learn was how to hear the Lord's voice. Because in my mind, whenever I started recognizing my thoughts, and I began to know how I think, well, I know when a different thought would come in my mind, you know, the whole thing was to figure out whether it was from the Lord or from the enemy. And so about that time, the thought comes across my mind that says, well, they have that right. And my super spiritual response was, huh? You know, he said, they have that right. And he said, they are your authorities, and they have your best interest at heart. And you need to just do the best you can at what they ask you to do. And so I really sat with that for a while, and I knew it from the Lord because it was about authority. Because if it had been from the enemy, it would have been, hey, forget authority, you know, rebel, all this kind of stuff. But the fact that it was, you know, that he said they were my authorities. So then as I pondered that morning, I said, well, Lord, do I need to go back to anybody? Have I said something that I need to try and, you know, do my part to make right? And basically, He pointed out to me that pretty much everything that had happened in my mind. You know, I hadn't done anything yet. But he brought two instances to mind. And the kind of the week before I had that prayer, I'd gone to my physical therapist. And at the time, Tara kept assigning me things that were weird to me. I mean, I've spent a lot of times in a gym, and all the stuff she was having me do, I just was bad at it. It was not making sense, and it just was hard. And so I had gone to Tara, and I'm sure, you know how you replay things in your mind? I'm sure I was much more arrogant than what it comes about in my mind, because I basically went to Tara and said, look, I'm pretty familiar with the gym, and if you'll just, you don't even have to assign me anything, but if you'll just let me go, I'll lift, I'll run, I'll do all those kinds of things, and you can just kind of, you know, give me time. And I'll make my legs burn, and I'll come out with a sweat, all kind of stuff. And Tara had said to me, she goes, well, listen, that's really interesting, because my job isn't to get you in shape. My job is to help improve your balance. And at that point, I was really thinking that, wow, that makes sense, because a lot of times when I would walk, when Elaine and I would go for walks around Pate, I would bump into her and then I'd step off the curb. And a lot of times when I was walking through a door, I'd bump into a threshold because my balance was just off. And so I'd gone back to, after that prayer that morning, I went back to Terry and I said, look, whatever you assign me to do, I'm going to do the best I can at it. So it may not make sense to me. I've never done a lot of this before, but I'll do the best I can. And I said, I trust you, and I think you're going to do what's right. And the other person I went to is my speech therapist. And at that time, she was doing this this thing called Vital Stem. And it basically, because of my swallowing issues, they put these magnets on your throat. And what happens is, at different times, it'll kind of shock you for a different length of time. It'll shock your throat for 5 seconds to 15 seconds. It just goes on and off the whole time. They're trying to recreate those muscles to work. And so
Tracy has a pretty high pain tolerance, and he hated that therapy. I mean, he would just be like...
It was the first thing of the day.
Mm-hmm. And it was like... obviously, he remembers that.
Oh, yeah. It was. It was bad. And so I was fixing to have another swallowing test right before we were to leave to come home for my son's wedding. And so the Wednesday before that we were going to leave on Friday, and I had gone to Penny, and I said, Penny, I said, I really appreciate what you've been doing with Vital Stem, and I want you, this was, you know, again, about a week before, before I had that prayer that morning, and I said, I appreciate you doing this Vital Stem, but I want you to know that no matter what the results of the swallowing test are, after that, up or down, I'm out on Vital Stem. I said, I do not want to do it anymore. It's just the worst start to my day. I mean, I don't want to do it. And so, I had just gone to her and said, that's it. So after my prayer, I went back to Penny. I said, look, I want you to know. I said, this was on the kind of the Wednesday before we were leaving. I said, no matter what the results of the swallowing test are, I still want the 2 days off, you know, from that. But after I get back from Amarillo, if you think Vital Stem is in my best interest, I'm all in. And so what happened is when she did give me the 2 days off, which were amazing. But then when we got back that Monday, besides Vital Stem, she had another
She doubled up. Another unpleasant therapy.
What really came to mind is, by changing my attitude that it was A-OK, then it became not as bad as it once was. And so really the whole thought of how you look at something makes something better or worse. And really what in the long run, what I began to think about authority, before authority, I used to think there were three categories to authority. You could reject it, you could question it, or you could accept it. But I figured out there's a fourth category, and that is if you embrace authority. And when you embrace authority, I am convinced that my whole stay at Pate was shortened because of the fact that I embraced authority. In fact, when we got ready to leave, I went around and were speaking to a lot of the therapists and thanking them and everything. And there were so many who said, I've never seen anybody work so hard as you've worked. And in fact, I went to one physical therapist, and he just said, you don't understand what it's like to have a patient like you. Said that does what I ask and does it to the best of their ability. There are so many people who are defeated before they ever step in here. And it really, it meant a lot to him that I was giving my best. I didn't always do it very well, but I was trying the best I could. And so that was, that's kind of, but the whole thing of authority, at one point I really sat back and I wasn't questioning the Lord, but I was pondering, saying, God, there's a million things you could have told me. Why did you choose authority? And so as I walked it out, I really think it was because he wanted to show me what embracing authority would do as opposed to just accepting it.
And, you know, sometimes when you go through the type of thing that we've been walking through the last couple of years, the things that you take away from it are not always just hugely profound. We were talking about that when we visited, that sometimes it's simple. It's a simple truth, but then you just learn it at a deeper level and a different level of understanding. And my experience at Pate was very different from Tracy's in that pretty much my day was waiting for him to come back. And when we had been scheduled to go check in and we were planning to be there for 4 months, it really was, there was a sense of dread for me of just thinking, this is going to be a long time to be out in the middle of nowhere, just so much isolation. Tracy's going to be gone all day. And yet what that season was such a sweet time for us to be together. We had so many weeks. We were it for each other. We were the only company we each had. And I was so grateful that I was in a position, we had the flexibility where I could actually come and stay with him full time. We had looked at a couple of other physical therapy, acute rehab facilities that would have been closer to Amarillo. We were anxious to try and get back closer to home. We were a long ways from our support system, but we selected this one. One of the big reasons was because I could be there with him all the time, and it turned out to be, it wasn't just for Tracy, it was for me too, that I needed to be there, and we had really almost like a second honeymoon of just so much time, so much to be able to reflect and spend time together. It was really a gift and not a punishment to be there for all those weeks. The main takeaway as far as one of the things that spiritually I learned during that season was the difference between being a watchman or being controlling. Because a watchman responds out of love, and we control out of fear. And what I had to do on a daily basis was we were having to balance to give Tracy freedom to do things. You know, just even beginning walking on his own, not having someone with him, walking from where we stayed down to the physical therapy area, even those things. And then by the time we left, he was actually being retrained to drive. So that's a lot of letting go. And a lot of getting past your fear of wanting to protect him. And a friend of mine said, you're going to have to just ask the Lord every decision of, am I being a watchman or am I being controlling? Because it wasn't just like a day at a time. It was a decision by decision of knowing, okay, if I need to say, no, I don't think you should be doing that, am I just afraid something's going to happen to him? Or am I truly just loving him and setting a boundary that needs to be there? And the Lord would just answer it. Because I never knew. There was too much emotion wrapped up in it, and I didn't know. But God just showed me step by step, which was, I still do that. I wish I had known that with my children. You know, parenting, I parented so much out of control and out of fear. And I would love to have known it then, but hey, we do the best we can at the time, and now we'll go forward. I can do that with my grandchildren.
Yeah, we've got grandkids right around the corner.
So closing. It's your closing.
Well, like I mentioned earlier, it's easier to believe that God will do something for us, but it's harder to believe he will do something for us instead of for somebody else. And that's, I think I said that earlier.
We just passed our 2-year anniversary. And on that weekend, Tracy was actually in the mountains with Gary Henders. They were doing this tremendous hike. And I was back home, and it was very interesting to me that I hadn't even realized that there were some things that I still needed to grieve. And I spent just a full day just grieving over some of the things that had been lost. That even though God had done such and continues has done so much in restoration, there were things that were lost. Tracy still struggles with his reading, mainly because of that. We sold his CPA practice at the beginning of this year, and there's just still a lot of unknowns that we're facing. But it was to allow myself the freedom to grieve, but not to dwell there. To pick up and then go, okay, that's all right. It's okay. I'm not fooling anyone, like Tracy was saying earlier. Not hiding something from God if you're still carrying a hurt. But it's just we don't want to stay there. And so I just spent that day. And then it was like, after that, it was like, I couldn't cry anymore. I couldn't even bring anything up. It's like, well, that was it. That's done. You know, now let's go forward. And we are just expecting and so excited about the future. We don't even look back at 2014 as a bad year and just go, that was just, oh man, we're just so glad that that was over. It was like, it was such a revelation of God's love, of other people's love, our love for each other. It was something that we wouldn't have chosen it. If we went back, we probably still wouldn't choose it, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Thank you for joining us for this podcast. It was recorded at the ministry of Summit Church in Canyon, Texas. If this message helped and encouraged you, please share it with someone else. For more, please go to yoursummitchurch.com.